for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's September 2023, and you are listening to episode 356, which is a spoiler-filled conversation about the film The Sound of Freedom, which is still in theaters now. On this episode, I'm joined by Cole Burgett, who is a graduate of Dallas Theological Seminary and the Moody Bible Institute. He teaches classes in Bible exposition and systematic theology, and also writes extensively about theology and popular culture. Cole has written a film review of The Sound of Freedom, and his review is called The Price of Life in The Sound of Freedom, and you can read it for free at our website, equip.org. Cole, it's good to have you on again.
Always good to be here. Thanks.
Today we're talking about the huge blockbuster hit, The Sound of Freedom, which is a film that is, I believe, still in theaters. You probably can find it in some smaller theaters. It's not streaming just yet, but we wanted to cover it because it came out of nowhere and has become this kind of phenomenon that has frankly surprised Hollywood. So, Cole, why don't you tell our listeners what the Sound of Freedom film is about?
Sure. So, Sound of Freedom released a few months ago, sort of took the world by storm. It's a film starring Jim Caviezel, who is probably best known for playing Jesus of Nazareth in Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ, and also for playing John Rhys in Jonathan Nolan's television series Person of Interest, which was really a pretty good show. It's generally considered one of the better science fiction shows ever made, and sort of got him back onto to TV screens and back into the public conscience. The film Sound of Freedom follows a sort of a homeland security officer who more or less goes rogue, if you will, to rescue children in sex trafficking operations in Colombia. And the film has gotten a lot of attention simply because it's reportedly based on true events or some version of a true story. So the character that Caviezel plays in the film is an actual person named Tim Ballard. So that's sort of the gist of the film, the 30,000 foot overview of what it is. And it's done quite well for itself, all things considered.
So as I mentioned already, the film has been this surprising major box office smash. And this has been fascinating because it has even beat some of the North American ticket sales of huge blockbusters. So why do you think this is the case?
Well, just painting in broad strokes, I think it's actually a pretty well-made film. And even though it has received a lot of traction in more conservative Christian circles and things like that, the film itself does not feel as though it's been made by and is catering to people of faith convictions. It certainly is in one sense a film that is made with a great amount of respect for human dignity. And I actually think that's one of the things that sets it apart from some other films that have tried to deal with the same content, like Taken, for example. But that being said, it doesn't revel in the grotesqueness of the subject matter. So I think it's done well largely because of the handling of the subject matter. It's a film that in so many other circumstances, done by so many other filmmakers, would have had a hard R or maybe even an NC-17 rating. It's made with a large amount of restraint, which secured it a PG-13 rating. For, you know, the PG-13 rating in Hollywood is really coveted because it ensures that a larger audience will be able to see the film. It sort of opens the door to younger viewers, teenagers, and that kind of a thing. So in that respect, the film has a wide reach. It has, of course, been picked up, considering that it's distributed by Angel Studios, the same group that distributes The Chosen. This is their second theatrical film release, if I'm not mistaken. So it's gotten all this traction among conservative, more faith-oriented people. But again, it's a film that doesn't appeal, let's say, singularly to that kind of market. It's a film that actually feels quite well made. It feels like an old school thriller. A close analog that comes to mind is the Taylor Hackford film, the early 2000s film Proof of Life, which is a very different kind, sort of a high concept thriller. And this feels very much in that same vein, so to speak, but less violent. It's considering that the subject matter, this is a surprisingly bloodless film. And again, you compare this with something like Taken, which sort of deals with the same material and was also a very popular film. It's sort of night and day in its handling of the subject matter. This film is very reserved. It's very careful. It's very thoughtful, but it's extremely well made and it's very well acted by everyone involved. And so it has a real broad appeal. And it doesn't, again, feel as though it's made specifically targeting a certain people group. I think the writers and the producers and the director just sort of set out to tell a good story, or what as best they could. And I think that's exactly what they did, and it, you know, it's paying off.
So Taken is an older film. It came out in 2008. And a lot has happened online, especially with the rise of pornography and sex trafficking. So you would think that this is the kind of film that would not be one that Christians would see, given the subject matter. So many Christians actually have come out in support of this film. And so is this a film that Christians can get behind? Because that's a question that we would get. And also, you have said it's not, everything is suggested and disturbing, but not shown.
Yeah, I actually think Owen Gleiberman with Variety, in his review of the film, which was a very positive review, you know, he says, I'm not a right-wing fundamentalist conspiracy theorist, which has been what a lot of the news media surrounding the film has kind of focused on. You know, he says, I'm not any of those things. I'm not looking for some kind of dark faith-based suspense film or anything like that. But then he turns around and says that you don't have to be any of those things in order to watch Sound of Freedom and see it as a very compelling film, to see it as a film that, I think the way he says it, shines a light on one of the true criminal horrors of our time, even one that Hollywood has mostly shied away from, probably because of the subject matter. And I think his review is very, very accurate and very, very well written and very good for that reason. It's a film that Christians can certainly get behind because it has such a great amount of respect for the sanctity of human life, because it has a very serious conviction about, you know, basic human dignity. And in that respect, I think Christians can certainly get behind this film. What tends to happen with films like this is a Christian will simply see that Angel Studios has produced it and think, oh, this is a Christian film. And then because, you know, Jim Caviezel has a line in the movie about, you know, God's children are not for sale, and he quotes a passage in Matthew, I think it is, people sort of go, oh, this is a Christian film, which it's not, at least not in the way that something like a God's Not Dead, for example, is a Christian film. This is not that, but it is absolutely a film I think that Christians can get behind because of its tone, because of its handling of the subject matter, because it's sort of fearless and audacious in choosing to handle the subject matter and then do it in a way that is very restrained. I think it's, if you've never written a screenplay or you don't know anything about movie making, I think it's sort of a shock for people to realize that it is actually much more difficult to show restraint and suggest things in a film than it is to just go out there and do it, to go out there and, you know, show what you're going to show and make what you want to make. And there's a very real sense in which this film could not have been made by a thoroughly secular, let's say thoroughly atheistic, a thoroughly anti-humanist perspective. There is no scenario in which a director and a writer and a producer who don't have any sort of strong convictions about the kind of story that they're telling comes in and does this film and shows the amount of restraint while still conveying the horrors of what is really going on, like this film does. And I think where that has paid off is in ensuring that this is in fact a film that adults can watch and actually be very disturbed by, while at the same time taking older teenagers to see it, and watch the film being done in such a way that the teenagers can follow it without being, you know, sort of scandalized by anything other than what's being suggested, which, you know, you should be. That's kind of the whole point. And it's very well made in that regard. So yeah, it's a film that I think Christians can get behind. It's pretty well done.
We have got a bunch of interesting topics coming up next month in October, around that time of year when people are thinking about subject matter that revolves around Halloween. We are going to have a conversation about horoscopes, horror films, and also occult teacher Edgar Cayce. So please tune in for those episodes. And as always, we really do rely on our listeners to help us continue this podcast. And the best way that you can do that is partnering with us by giving us a tip, something like $3, $5, $10. And you can do that at our website, equip.org. Simply go there and see journal, click on that, see postmodern realities, click on that. And there is a link at any of the landing pages to give us a tip. And we would be really grateful for that. But our easy free way you can help us out is helping us out with the algorithm. And again, leaving us a rating or review at Apple Podcasts is probably the best way to do that. And just simply telling your friend about this podcast. The more people that know about it, the more that we can get our information out there to help equip Christians as they share their faith. And so now back to our conversation about the Sound of Freedom film with Cole Burgett. Well, you were just mentioning that Christians could get behind this film, and you mentioned Angel Studios. Now, tell us a little bit more about that film studio that might be familiar to some people.
Angel Studios put out The Chosen. It's an American film distribution studio based in Provo, Utah. It was founded originally by the Harmons. The Harmons are a family of Mormons. So that you know, to what degree do you characterize the studio as a Mormon studio? I think you have to be very careful with that, because its founders are, but it's certainly putting out content by faith-based people, but not necessarily what we would consider Mormon people. I mean, they did the Wingfeather Saga. Of course, they're putting out The Chosen. And you always sort of see these, you know, people who will come along and say, well, the Mormons did it, so there must be some type of, you know, Mormon ideology laced throughout. And that's not the case. But it is just a studio that was founded primarily by Mormons and based in Utah.
It's interesting because this film is an Angel Studio film. Before the film showed, they showed different previews, and some of the forthcoming films like have a protagonist that's Roman Catholic, a nun. So it's interesting how they're choosing different topics. Well, let's talk about this. The film specifically, it focuses on a character named Tim Ballard. Who is he?
Yeah, so Tim Ballard is the founder of Operation Underground Railroad. Operation Underground Railroad is a group nonprofit that is sort of built to rescue children from sex trafficking and sexual exploitation. And it was founded by Tim Ballard, who spent, according to the website, spent more than a decade working as a special agent for the Department of Homeland Security. His background is with the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, and later as an undercover operative for the U.S. Child Sex Tourism Jump Team. And so the film sort of dramatizes some of his exploits during this time. He would eventually go on, I think around 2013, and he and some of his co-workers would sort of leave their work with the government to establish Operation Underground Railroad as a private foundation to begin rescuing children. Ballard is a Mormon himself, even though that's not really brought out in the film. He's sort of known for that, which I think is kind of interesting. But again, the film never really highlights any of that. I mean, he's shown to be someone of faith in the film, but it doesn't really get into the details of what he is and what he isn't. But Ballard's life, the degree to which the film accurately portrays Ballard's life, I mean, that's up for grabs. I know after the film came out, he had to sort of release at least the nonprofit had to release here are the facts versus the fictions that the film portrays, especially regarding Ballard's life. But at the end of the day, that's really who he is and what he's doing. I know right when the film came out, I think he had left. He's still credited as the founder, but I think he stepped down as the CEO of the organization. I'm not really sure the details surrounding that. It seems to be that he stepped away for the purposes of promoting the film. And probably because with the film coming out and doing as well as it was doing, that disrupts one's life quite heavily, especially when you're the center of that. So, yeah, that's Ballard.
Just regarding the subject matter, I don't know if some of our listeners know this, but it's not disputed by people who are not religious at all that there is such a thing as child sex tourism that you just mentioned. And it is mostly people from Western countries going to poorer countries, specifically South Asia, which is not depicted in this film. But there are people that work for the government, Homeland Security, etc., and who deal with cybercrime and so forth, who are actually engaged in trying to prosecute some of these people who go abroad. So it is a real thing. Sex slavery for children, and you know, that's anyone under 18, so that's a wide berth, but The film makes some claims that very, very small children are being abused in this fashion and abducted. And actually, at the beginning of the film, they do show some real live shots of child abductions. I don't know. It seems sensational. I don't know that they're all like that. But it is a very real thing that has pretty much been growing because of pornography online, and specifically the growth of child pornography. So this isn't a made-up actual subject matter. It is a subject matter that maybe some Christians don't realize exists. But I do want to say, we're not going to be talking about a biblical sexual ethic in this conversation, but people who watch pornography are kind of adding to the whole issue of child pornography and some of the sex trafficking. So in your review, you talk about how the film, you know, was created, how it came to be. Can you give us a brief overview about how this film specifically decided to make the real person, Tim Ballard, and his work the subject of the film itself?
Yeah, so the story is actually kind of interesting. The writer, the writing duo of Alejandro Monteverde and Rod Barr, they set out to write a film after the director. He said he had been watching, in some interviews, he had been watching things like 2020 and Dateline. And this was back, I think, in 2017, around there, when they were covering so many of these child trafficking, sex slavery subjects. Because again, it is a very real world phenomenon, very terrible and widespread real world issue. And so he was watching all of these documentaries and things being made, and he kind of, to the point the way he says it is, he was just so disturbed, he knew he had to write something. So he sat down to write something, and he had written a film called The Model. And The Model followed this sort of this wealthy, happy-go-lucky type character who, when he heard about, he uncovered this underground sex slavery ring, begins using his financial resources to essentially purchase children and then give them their freedom. So that was the original film. And in many ways, the setup for that movie sounds as though it's going to have, you know, better character development than what Sound of Freedom actually had. In many ways, that film, The Model, would have, I think, have been a more traditional type of film to make. But after the script had been written, I think there was a producer attached to the film who asked the writers if they knew about Tim Ballard. And of course they had not, but when they began looking into him and seeing what he was doing, they ended up rewriting the script to center it on Ballard's life. So that's sort of how the film went from conception to being about Ballard. And it's worth pointing out that there are creative liberties that have been taken in their portrayal of Ballard. And that's it, you know, every biographical film does this to one degree or another. There are always creative liberties taken because you're having to structure things. There's always condensing of timelines, and no one wants to sit there and watch, you know, paperwork being filed. So there are certainly things that streamline the process. But by and large, the broad strokes of the film seem to highlight things that actually happened, from Ballard becoming disillusioned with the red tape, so to speak, and then making the choice to sort of strike out, do something different on his own. Those sorts of things are there, but the specific details of the plot, that's all, you know, it is sort of fictional. I guess the best way to take it is it's based on certain personalities and characters in the real world, but these specific contrivances of the plot are generally pretty fictional.
Well, probably the biggest notoriety of this film has been the controversy surrounding it. And I'm not sure because maybe it wouldn't have registered, but because it became so successful, I've seen articles ranging from questioning its box office receipts, that did it really make that much money, to the fact that it's promoting some racist worldview, which I found fascinating because the main producers and the director are Latino, and a lot of the actors are Latino, and it takes place in South America. And so I found that interesting. And so it's been this kind of swirl of controversy around the film. So can you discuss some of the criticisms? Those are only a few that I thought were fascinating. But what are some of the other criticisms that have been raised against the film? Because there's been quite a few articles criticizing it.
Yeah, so it was sort of an interesting film to write about and review, because at some point it stopped becoming about the film. And it's actually quite frustrating, at least on my end, as someone who's trying to do their homework and research the film and that sort of thing. At some point, it stops becoming about the film and becoming about something else. And most of the criticisms I've seen regarding the film primarily involve two things. The first is the film's portrayal of human trafficking. And on one level, I can understand the concern. Because, for example, just to use the illustration you used, the film sort of begins with footage of children just sort of being taken right off the street. And a lot of experts in the field have come out and criticized the film. Because I say, well, this is not what child trafficking actually looks like. It's usually not a situation in which someone just walks up to a child and takes them off the street. It's usually a family member. It's usually a family friend. It's usually a longer process of, the word we use today is grooming, of grooming a child, of coercing and coaxing a child into situations and scenarios that don't cause any sort of very serious emotional distress. It's a long period of much more sinister manipulation that occurs, so that when they're in the world, it's almost like they don't even know which way is up anymore. And a lot of experts in the field have criticized the film for not portraying it in that way. And look, here's the thing. At the end of the day, it's a movie, right? This is not a documentary. So I've never particularly found it helpful to come at a picture like this and say, well, it's doing it in a way that's unusual to the way that we know it's supposed to be done. Okay, well, the story that it's telling, this is how it happens in this situation. That's just how I look at that. In this situation, the way the film is doing it, this is one of those situations where children are just sort of taken against their will. There is an element of coercing, and there is an element of emotional manipulation. Certainly that's in there, but it's not the focal point. And you get the sense that had the film maybe taken a different tact to how it deals with child trafficking, then, you know, maybe the criticisms on that end would be less. My suspicion, however, is that that wouldn't be the case, that no matter what a film did in order to cover the subject matter with a remotely serious tone, there were always going to be criticisms, because it has that caveat of being quote unquote based on a true story. If the film had simply gone, had the movie been the model, the original screenplay, I think you would see less and less of these kinds of criticisms. But what I think works people up into a frenzy is when they see those words true story on the screen. Well, to what degree is this actually true? And that sort of brings, you know, the experts out of the woodworks. And it happens that way with any film that is quote unquote based on a true story. There's always an added level of scrutiny to the proceedings, where the creative liberties get less and less of a free pass. And a great example of this is, again, looking at that 2008 film Taken with Liam Neeson, which I saw years ago, saw it when it came out. It was a very popular film when it came out, remains a very popular film. It's sort of dark, but a very fun, in one sense, type thriller, action thriller type movie. Deals with the same subject matter. A child, though I think she's older in Taken, she's a teenager in Taken, is taken against her will and put into child trafficking, put into human trafficking, and basically with the intent of becoming a sex slave. And that film, wildly sensational. I mean, you have the drama is that she's taken and she's the daughter of this, you know, ex special forces operator. You know, it's the male fantasy, the guy who can kill everybody in the room. And of course, that's what he does when he goes to get his daughter. Highly sensational film, highly sensational film. So when I watch The Sound of Freedom, which has a grand total of one body that I'm fairly certain is killed off screen by comparison, and I see these criticisms saying that Sound of Freedom is a sensational film. To me, it's like apples and oranges. I actually think it's quite hilarious because of how stupid of an accusation that is by comparison. Taken is a sensational film. There's bodies everywhere. I mean, the movie ends on a yacht, and the villain is this, you know, this sheik with an army of bodyguards. If anything, the accusations about Sound of Freedom and this QAnon stuff, which we can talk about in just a second. I mean, if anything, Taken is the better representative of that. But nowhere do you see Taken in any of these discussions. And even when the film came out, you didn't even see these discussions, which is hilarious to me that this film, Sound of Freedom, has become the lightning rod for this conversation. When, you know, to its credit, it's probably tried to do things a little more grounded, a little more realistic than any other film that I've seen that tackles this content matter. And I find that absolutely fascinating. So the experts have a problem with it, and fair enough, you know, but at the same time, I don't think it's sitting there and is trying to give you a look at what child trafficking actually is. I think it's telling a story, a very similar story to Taken, but it does it in a way that is a little more grounded, that is a little more steeped in realism. So I don't think the film should just be disregarded because it doesn't adhere to what real life trafficking looks like. But here's the thing. I mean, have there been children who are taken against their will and sold into sex slavery? Yeah. I mean, to say that, well, this isn't what it usually looks like is not to say that it has never happened this way ever in the history of ever. I mean, that's just kind of stupid. But it is what it is. Take it for what it is. And, you know, it's actually a fairly grounded and bloodless film, pretty well made. The other major criticism, and this is the one that was a doozy for me, because I had heard about this QAnon stuff. I think I had tried to understand it once before and didn't, even though everybody on the internet seems to think that because I'm a conservative fundamentalist Christian, that I should know someone who subscribes to this ideology. But the truth is, I don't. I would characterize my family as some of the most, you know, right-wing, dyed-in-the-wool, conservative people you'll ever meet. And I can't say I've ever heard one of them even come close to articulating something that apparently all of these Christians are buying. And I've been in these conservative circles pretty much all my life and can't tell you I don't know a single person who thinks this way, because that would be weird. But apparently, due to some comments that people like Jim Caviezel have made, there is this belief that the film has been attached to or has found support by this QAnon group. This QAnon political conspiracy theory movement, whatever it is, supposedly emerged in 2017. just according to what I can read online to make the most sense out of this, QAnon deals with claims made online by an individual known as Q. So I sort of, you know, am reading this and researching this and thinking, so this is like a V for Vendetta kind of thing. And the core belief is that there is a cabal, or this organization, this group of satanic and, you know, devil worshiping cannibalistic child molesters who are running a global child sex trafficking operation. And then somehow or another, they conspired against Donald Trump, who was like secretly fighting them from the White House. I mean, it's just, it's pretty nutty. And I can't say that I know a single person who has even come close to articulating anything that sounds like that to me. So I'm seeing the film Sound of Freedom sort of tied in with conversations about this. And to be very honest, I'm sitting there scratching my head trying to figure it out, because nowhere, I mean, maybe I missed it, but nowhere in this film is anything even close to something like that articulated. Nowhere in this film is that even suggested as a potential possibility. And so I don't understand where the connections are coming from. I think the few things that I've seen that reviewers have pointed out is, I think Donald Trump hosted a viewing of the film at one of his houses. And this, of course, stokes the fires of the QAnon people. The other thing that I've seen is Jim Caviezel, who is a very interesting human being. He's a very good under actor. He underacts more than Clint Eastwood. I don't know anything about the man personally, except for the fact that he's sort of a very devout Catholic. And he's made some comments that are not directly related to the QAnon thing, but it has led people to suspect that, oh, does he believe this stuff? And so it sort of gets thrown in that way. But I will point out very simply, in interviews I read with the director, I think the director really hates that the film is being linked in with this nonsense. Based on comments the director has made, he sort of stopped giving interviews right after the film sort of came out, because all the interviews devolved into these, you know, frankly, just moronic questions. And as someone who's written movies, a screenwriter and that kind of a thing, I mean, I get where the guy's coming from. I get it. The absolute last thing you want to do when you sit down to talk about a film that has become wildly successful, more so than you expected it to be, especially when it was made on such a slim budget, the last thing you want to do is field questions that make you just want to look at the reporter and say, is there something wrong with you? I get that. That's the last thing you want to do. And it really is sort of frustrating that there's a sense in which the film probably could have done better than it already has been doing were it not attached to these ridiculous sort of notions. That being said, you look at the success of the film, I don't think it has deterred anything. But I'm sure there's someone on the other side who looks at it and goes, well, see, there's proof that those people are out there because they're going to see the movie. And I mean, you know, at this point, there's no winning. In this culture, there's no winning. It doesn't matter how dumb something is. It doesn't matter how stupid something is. There's no winning. I'm quite fond of saying, you know, the culture wars are over. We lost. Simple as that. For Christians who are still wanting to fight the culture wars, they're over. We lost. Take casualties well at this point. I find so much of the conversation about this film exhausting when really, you can just watch the movie, and it's quite a well-made film, and I'm very happy for the director, and I completely sympathize with the frustrations he and the other writer now face because of the controversy surrounding it.
And some of the controversy that you mentioned was that that's not typically how child trafficking is actually conducted, but some of the characters were based on people in real life. There's a character that opens up the movie, and she is a very attractive like model. And there actually was a woman who is still in custody, who was, I think, part of one of the raids that are depicted in the film, which is actually something that happened. I know some people are questioning the veracity of Tim Ballard, but one thing that is not under question is that one of the things that was portrayed actually happened, because they show film real life video from the actual raid on an island where there were kids. And it wasn't, I think in the film, they're using a lot of smaller children, but you know, the definition of child in most Western countries is, you know, 18 and under or 17 and under. Anyway, this lady is a real person. She was a former beauty queen, and she has allegedly been involved. She's been in custody for almost 10 years. I don't think charges have been filed against her, but her real name is Kelly Suarez, and there was a character, Giselle. So it's not, they didn't try to make up something wholesale, totally fiction, but it was loosely based on real life people. And so I find the criticisms, again, fascinating, especially the one saying that, you know, it has a certain agenda that's racist when all the people, the main people involved in it are Latino.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It is such an odd film to read the criticisms about, because I found as I was reading more and more, I was moving out of the territory of film reviews and into the territory of sort of, well, is it really true? Did any of this even happen? And yeah, actually there's quite a bit of it that it's based on things that really did happen, and not just the beauty queen character, but the contact that Ballard has in Colombia, that sort of the older guy who becomes in a way some of the comedic relief in the film, but who has that very, and it's so well acted. He has that really like disturbing backstory where he's picked up what he thought was sort of like a prostitute without realizing that it was a child. And he only learns after the fact that it was a child. It's based on an actual person. Of course, the name has been changed, and you know the personality is different. But the idea of that character came from an actual person that you know Ballard knows. So there's such a scrutiny on little like specific details that, again, were this a film that simply didn't have that based on a true story attached to it, would any of these conversations even be happening? Who knows? Who knows? I'm inclined to think that's not the case. But I do find it, I'm kind of like you. I'm baffled by some of the criticisms regarding it. But yeah, especially the island raid. The whole island raid did happen. I think they said that in reality, there were actually some older people on the island as well. They were not just children, there were adults. But I even think the numbers were larger. I think the number of the people that Ballard rescued, along with the local authorities there, were, if I'm not mistaken, it was three digits. There were over 100. I could be wrong about that. But I know the number was higher than what is actually depicted in the film, which is kind of crazy to think about, that the film, this is one of the places where the film is actually, it undersells the reality, if anything. So very fascinating.
I wonder also if some of the controversy is because of Angel Studios and the success of The Chosen, because I did see something that made the news, like there's an actual person who donated money to the making of this film that ends up being arrested for like child pornography or something like that. And I don't know if our listeners know kind of how Angel Studios funds some of their things, but for The Chosen, they allow people to crowdfund it, basically. You can, you know, they don't have to go to big, huge investors or venture capital groups or whatever who won't make these religious subject matter films or television series. And so they just ask the average person. And now because of crowdfunding, it's so much easier. Back in the day, independent filmmakers had to ask their friends, but now we have Kickstarter and other things, although they do it on their own platform. So, you know, any kind of thing like that has also garnered news. Oh, somebody who gave a donation to this and was arrested. And now you're saying, you know, but you're trying to have this movie about sex trafficking for children. So I find all of that interesting. And I wonder if it's because there is a religious tinge, let's say, in the film.
Yeah, you do get, again, it's that line that Caviezel has, God's children are not for sale. And then he quotes some scripture. So there is a very, let's say, subtle religious bend that's in there. But here's the thing. How many movies quote the Bible? You know what I mean? I mean, there's so many films that do that just because it's part of the lexicon. It's part of the culture. There are films that will use phrases of scripture without even realizing they're using phrases of scripture, again, just because it is part of the lexicon now. So simply having a film that where the main character quotes the Bible in a particular context, that's not there to preach at someone or to quote unquote convert someone. He's actually using it to condemn someone. Does not a, you know, one-to-one religious corollary make. That being said, there's no debating that the filmmakers, the producer, the director, Raised Catholic, Caviezel Catholic, Ballard Mormon, Angel Studios, founded by Mormons, there's no sort of debating that there is a kind of behind the scenes bend toward religion, faith of some kind. What I find most fascinating about that, again, is that I do not think this film could have been made by a thoroughly secular group of filmmakers who just had no regard for human life or didn't have a lens that was at least Christian influence. Because I think everybody could agree that Catholicism, Mormonism, both are Christian influenced. There's no scenario in which a thoroughly secular filmmaker could make this kind of film with this much restraint. What you would get is another Taken. This film does something quite differently because its heart's in a very different place. And I think there's something honest about that. And again, to see it sort of mired in these ridiculous discussions and to, you know, see the director just kind of throw his hands up and say, you know, this is dumb. I'm not doing these interviews and fielding these kinds of ridiculous questions when I set out to just make an honest film. It can be disheartening, but at the end of the day, you know, this is the world we live in. So everybody wanting to make a film, just be aware of that.
And for the Christian apologist, I think that there is just a lot of food for thought here, but for both Christians and non-Christians, because as we know, not just non-Christians consume pornography, and this is adjacent to it. And it also brings up a lot of issues about human sexuality, the value of humanity, what are people, the objectification of people, all these kinds of issues. And our listeners will find on equip.org, we have a lot of different articles that talk about a biblical view of sexuality and what it also means when we're talking about the value of human life or the value of a spouse or any of those other things that are probably, this is a good springboard into some of those issues. So this is a very thought-provoking film in that regard. And honestly, if we probably, you know, all of us probably know of someone who has been affected by this issue in one way or another. So it is a big issue to talk about with regard to Christian ethics. But just to see the film, because I did not want to see this film because I already knew what the subject matter was. And even if it's not going to show me something explicit, I feel like it's going to be sitting in a theater confronted by darkness and the worst of sinful humanity. And so what's the best way to approach The Sound of Freedom as a viewer? Because I'm sure some of our listeners are like, oh, the subject matter, child trafficking, I'm out. you know, considering what it's about and just also all the controversy because, you know, what do you do when you see a movie? Well, at least what I do when I see a movie is I come home and I think, oh, okay, what did other reviewers say about this? And I look at that. And then of course you know, the internet gathers all the stuff that people have been looking at and you go down the rabbit hole of all the controversy surrounding this. And now I'm not looking at reviews, but I'm looking at people say that the director is racist or something like that. So what's the best way that people should watch this film? And do you encourage them to watch it? Because, you know, even though it's done tastefully, it is this very dark subject matter.
Yeah, when I'd left the theater, one of the things that I said is it is surprisingly dark. See, I saw it very late. I wasn't going to see it because all of the stuff that I had heard was that this was another one of those controversial Christian movies. You know, God's not dead, but that movie franchise should be, stuff like that, you know? Like, I was under the impression that this was going to be another hokey Christian movie. And I really had no interest in seeing it. But then it was doing so well. And so I saw it very late in the game, and I was struck by how dark it was as a film. Especially when all I had heard about it was, you know, it's a Christian movie, which it's not in any sort of objective sense. The behind the scenes, sure, people of faith, but the film itself does not, to me, it did not come across as this is an explicitly Christian film. Never got that sense. But it was very dark, and it did handle the subject matter, again, tastefully, as well as you can, I guess is the best way to say it. With a surprising amount of restraint, but it is a dark film. Should Christians view it? I mean, there are worse movies to watch, absolutely. You know, it's better than Taken, put it that way, and that's an extremely popular movie. But there's a fine line here, right? Because the film is based on true events. You know that even if the details aren't lining up one-to-one, it still has at least one foot on the ground of realism and things that could actually happen and have actually happened in the world. That adds a whole other level of unsettledness to it, as opposed to something like a Taken, which is just a kind of fantasy, even though, you know, the Taken is a fairly well-researched film in terms of trafficking operations at that time in Europe. What's interesting about Sound of Freedom is, again, the restraint that is shown with very dark subject matter that keeps the film grounded. So, do I think Christians can watch it? Absolutely. I think this film, more so than many others dealing with this subject matter, can they watch it? Absolutely. Should they watch it? Well, you know, my response to this always is what it is. You know, I don't think there's no movie out there that one should watch. I could make a case for, you know, what I think of the films that if you're going to watch something, these are the ones you should probably see before all others. But at the end of the day, I think you're only going to get mileage out of what you're going to get mileage out of. And for some people, this is not going to be for them. Some people can only approach this kind of material as a fantasy. They are going to really struggle with approaching it in such a grounded and quote unquote realistic, even though it's not usually the way child trafficking is done, whatever, fashion. That being said, you know, there are probably some people out there who could really benefit from watching something like this. I'll give you an example. There's a film that Paul Schrader made back in the 70s called Hardcore. Very obscure little film. Paul Schrader, at one time, the highest paid screenwriter in Hollywood, wrote Raging Bull, Taxi Driver, those sort of classic, dark, gritty crime films. The film he did called Hardcore follows a Calvinist father who sends his child to church camp. And she disappears. And he's thinking, you know, what anybody would think, kidnapping, something like that. So he hires a private investigator, played by Peter Boyle, to find her. And he does, but she hasn't been kidnapped, as far as can be told, he finds her in pornographic films. And so he, you know, it's one of those very tastefully done things where the film is being shown to the father, but the camera just sits on the father's face and expression as he realizes what he's watching. And I show that film. I recommend that film to guys I know who are really struggling with pornography. And it's a fictional movie. It's not, quote unquote, you know, based on true events or anything like that. But there is a sense in which it has a very raw, visceral power that gets you in a way that just reading a book about the dangers of pornography doesn't get you, because it captures your imagination. It captures your emotions in ways that someone looking at you and saying, this is wrong, don't do it, can't do. And so there are actually people I know who have dropped pornography because they watched that movie, because it's like seeing that world from a completely new set of eyes and realizing, you know, this is horrendous. What if this is my kid? I never think about, you know, these are somebody's children. You never think about that. And I wonder if Sound of Freedom could have that same effect. Watching the film gets you into the subject matter in a way, because it's telling a story, in a way that captures the imagination, that captures the emotions. Again, in a way that simply reading, you know, all the statistics on what it's supposed to be and what it looks like just can't do. So some of the criticisms kind of baffle me. But I think you're absolutely right. The Christian apologist can really go to work with this kind of film, especially in the realm of human dignity, the sanctity of human life, and just depravity in general. One of the things that Gleiberman points out in his review for Variety is this is a subject matter that by and large Hollywood has stayed away from. For whatever reason, speculate away. This film has no problem taking an unflinching look at human depravity. And you can definitely get mileage out of that.
And again, this is based on real world things that happen. You know, not all of child trafficking is in pornography. And that, you know, people say, okay, the end where he's tracking this drug dealer through the jungles of Mexico, and, you know, one of the kids that's been the character is now there as a sex slave. But you know what? This actually happens. I read a very in-depth investigative report about girls and women who had been trafficked during the whole entire situation in the recent Middle Eastern conflicts and, you know, with some of the extremist Muslim groups. I'm not going to name them, but you know what I'm talking about. And actually, that is really, you know, from interviews with what happened to these girls, that's what happened. These, you know, guerrilla warfare kind of captains, when they went into villages in, you know, Syria or wherever, Iraq, northern Iraq, and so forth, in the last probably 15 years, they would take the women and young girls. And some of these girls as young as 12 were being used as sex slaves. And so these things happen today in wars in the Middle East, in Africa, etc. So it's not so far-fetched. People are like, well, this would never happen. The other thing I read in the New York Times, so if people are dubious because this is a Christian film, is actually how women are trafficked by other women. And so when I saw that character of Giselle, I was thinking, this is not so far off, because that was hard for me to get my mind around how other women would lure in women in small towns. I think this was women in Eastern Europe and bringing them to Turkey, and they were being lured and so forth. So all that to say, and then they became sex slaves and these were adults. So all of that to say is there is much here for the Christian to consider. And also, like you did, you know, there are probably people, men and women, not probably, there are Christian men and women who partake of in pornography, and they're not realizing the serious underbelly of the trafficking of human life, whether it's an adult, whether it's a child, man, woman, a girl, all of these boys, all of these things that are happening. And so this kind of gives you that uncomfortable feeling without being explicit that I didn't realize this, or I did, but I didn't want to think about it. But we need to, because as Christians, we need to care about human beings and the dignity of their life. And that's important.
Absolutely. And you know, just to your point about the stuff occurring in South America and Central America, which is where this film sort of goes for it. So the statistics I saw, I think in 2012, if there were 20 million people trafficked, a tenth of that number was in South and Central America. So just because the film, you know, is set there doesn't mean that this doesn't happen in those regions. It's actually a major hotbed for this kind of stuff. Again, the frustration seems to be that it portrays human trafficking, child trafficking, whatever, in a specific way that largely is not normative to the complexities of the situation at hand. And fair, it's a fair criticism. I would just also say, well, that's not the version of the story that this film wants to tell. It's going to tell an outlier story, and it's going to tell it this way because it's easier, because creative liberties, because whatever reason. But I don't think the film should be passed up simply because, you know, somebody says, well, it's not normative. Well, what film is normative? They're very, at that point, it becomes a documentary.
Right. But I don't, you know, again, as I mentioned earlier, does Homeland Security investigate child sex tourism and child trafficking and the FBI? Yes, they do. So do a whole bunch of international law enforcement agencies. So this is not making up something that doesn't exist. And I wonder if that gets people, when they tie it to QAnon or other political things, I wonder if it gets people off the actual real thing. Trying to say is, hey, guess what? This exists. You don't think that this exists? There are more than a million, maybe millions of children in sex slavery somewhere in the United States. In the world, whether it be by war, whether it be by grooming, whatever it is, it's existing.
Yeah, it sort of deflects. You're absolutely right. It sort of deflects from the emphasis. And, you know, I think the statistics consistently show, like especially in Central America, the Caribbean, those areas, 8 out of 10, the most recent statistics I saw were that 8 out of 10 were young girls or young women, which is pretty consistent with what the film is portraying. So it's terribly, terribly fascinating, the statistics, the numbers, and what the film is portraying. And it is a very, very real problem today. And there's a sense in which the conversations and the controversies surrounding this film detract from that. And that's a shame.
Yes. So on a much lighter note from this very intense and dark topic, I have a fun question for Cole, and that is, this, you know, is in the genre of a biopic. So what's another favorite biopic of yours that you could recommend people watch?
That's a good question, and I hate answering questions about movies. I really like Lincoln. I really like Lincoln with Daniel Day-Lewis.
Well, thanks, Cole, for being a guest again on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to episode 356 of the Postmodern Realities podcast. Today's guest has been Cole Burgett, and we've been discussing the film The Sound of Freedom. He has written a review of the film on our website, and his film review is called The Price of Life in The Sound of Freedom. You can read it for free at our website, equip.org. Stay connected with the Christian Research Institute and all the new content we have coming your way. The best way to do that is to head on over to our website, equip.org. There you will find thousands of free resources right at your fingertips, from articles to video to audio, and it's all for free. You'll find our podcasts hosted there, as well as the Bible Answer Man broadcast, which is hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and streams live every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. In addition, you don't want to miss out on subscribing to Hank Unplugged, which is the podcast of Hank Hanegraaff. And in that podcast, he has really in-depth, free-flowing, essential Christian conversations with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people. And in addition, he has a new series on his podcast feed called Hank Unplugged Shorts, which Hank goes into the headlines in the mainstream media and refutes
a lot of those cultural issues that we have in these short podcast episodes. And there's quite a few of them. You don't want to miss out on them. Now, if you want to find some of this at other places where it's all in one place, really subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's a great way to get all of our content there, our podcasts there, and different individual questions theologically that people have that Hank answers at our YouTube channel. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, I don't know how to subscribe to YouTube. I don't have a YouTube account. Well, actually, you might just have a YouTube account. If you have a Gmail address, you have a YouTube account. Just log into YouTube with your Gmail address and search for Bible Answer Man channel, and please become one of our subscribers. In addition, if you see that bell icon right there on our front page, please click that, and every time that we have new content, you will receive a notification that new content is up on our channel for you to be able to consume. So thank you so much for the ways in which you partner with the Christian Research Institute. We are grateful for you listening and reading and watching.